Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Rangana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Rangana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jayo Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vardhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Hi, Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajaka Acharya Ashtotarashtra Shri Shimarisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotee. All glories to the assembled devotee. All glories to the assembled devotee. All glories to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 15, The Killing of Dhenuka, the Ass Demon. Text number 6. Word meanings: Ate, these; Alina, bees; Tava, your; Yashaha, glories; Akila Loka, for all worlds; Tirtham, the place of pilgrimage; Gayantaha, our chanting; Adi Purusha, O original personality of Godhead; Anupatam, following you along the path; Bhajante, they are engaged in worshipping; Praya, for the most part; Ami, these; Munigana, great sages; Bhavadiya, among your devotees; Mukhya, the most intimate; Gurham, hidden; Bane, within the forest; Api, even though; Najahati, they do not abandon; Anugha, O sinless one; Atmadaivam, their own worshipable deity. Ete linastava yasho kila loka tirtam. Gayanta ari purushanupatam bhajante. Prayo ami munigana bhavadiya mukhya. Gudam vanepi na jahatya na ghatma daivam. Ete linastava yasho kila loka tirtam. Gayanta ari purushanupatam bhajante. Prayo ami munigana bhavadiya mukhya. Gudham vanepi na jahatya na ghatma daivam. Ete linastava yasho kila loka tirtam. Gayanta ari purushanupatam bhajante. Prayo ami munigana bhavadiya mukhya. Guram vanepi na jahatyanu ghatma daivam. Gayanta ari purushanupatam bhajante.
Ete dinastava yasho kila loka tirtam.
Dayandari Purushanu Kotam Bhajante Prayo Ami Munigana Bhavadiya Mukhya Goram Bane Pijanahatmanadhatmatayvam. Ladies. Ete dinasta vayasho kila loka tirtam. Dayanta adi purushanu patam bhajante. Kayo ami munigana bhavadiya mukhya. Guram vanepi na jahatyana ghatma daivam. Ete dinasta vayashoki la loka tirtam. Dayanta adi purushan patam bhajante. Ayo ami munigana bhavadiya mukhya. Translation. This is Lord Balaram, our Lord Krishna speaking to Lord Balaram. O original personality, these bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. Though you have disguised yourself within this forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. Purport. The word Gudam is significant in this verse. It indicates that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his form of Krishna or Balaram, appears like an ordinary human being within the material world, great sages always recognize the Lord as the Supreme Absolute Truth. All the transcendental forms of Godhead are eternal and full of bliss and knowledge, exactly the opposite of our material bodies, which are temporary and full of misery and ignorance. One meaning of the word Tirtha is the means for crossing beyond material existence. Simply by hearing the glories of the Supreme Lord or by chanting them, one immediately comes to the spiritual platform beyond material existence. Thus, the Lord's transcendental glories are here described as a tirtha for everyone in the world. The word gayanta indicates that great sages give up their vows of silence and other selfish processes to glorify the activities of the Supreme Lord. Real silence means not to speak nonsense, to limit one's verbal activities to those sounds, statements, and discussions relevant to the loving service of the Supreme Lord. The word anagha indicates that the Supreme Lord never performs sinful or offensive activities. The word also indicates that the Lord immediately excuses a sin or offense committed by a sincere, loving devotee who may accidentally deviate from the Lord's service. In the specific context of this verse, the word anagha indicates that Lord Balaram was not disturbed by the bees who were constantly following him, anupatam. The Lord blessed them by saying, O bees, come into my confidential grove and feel free to taste its fragrance. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Ete linastava yasho kila loka tirtam gayanta adi purushanu patam bhajante prayo ami munigana bhavadiya mukhya gudam vanepi na jahatyanughatma daivam. O original personality, these bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. Though you have disguised yourself within this forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. This is always a memorable discussion where Lord Krishna is glorifying Balaram. Of course, everything he says is indicative of him himself. Everything that Krishna has, Balaram has. The only difference is in color, Prabhupada said. So Krishna is glorifying him and also glorifying Vrindavan, because in Vrindavan, that's the place where everyone is a servant, a worshiper of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even the bees. We tend to be afraid of bees, because sometimes, of course, bees are okay as long as you leave them alone. But if you don't, then they can sometimes sting you. But in Vrindavan, such a thing is never going to happen. Ali bee. Ali. We find this word often in many songs and prayers about Vrindavan. The bees are mentioned. Of course, we have the very famous pastime of Radharani talking to a bumblebee in her transcendental madness, considering the bumblebee a messenger from Krishna. And other places also, we have many pastimes where the bees, and even in descriptions of Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha, he's wearing a garland, and we hear that the garland is often surrounded by bees. So there seem to be a lot of bees around, buzzing in the spiritual world. Of course, what are they buzzing? They're buzzing the glories of the holy name. Everyone in Vrindavan is chanting the glories of Krishna, even the bees. Here the bees are compared to great sages, and they're enjoying the atmosphere, singing the glories of the Lord. And what is it here that's compared to it? The word Tirtha is here. How is it used in the verse? Place of pilgrimage. Let's see. They are worshiping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. So it's Krishna's glories, or the chanting of Krishna's glories, are called the Tirtha. And in the purport, it says that a tirtha means a place for crossing beyond material existence. It's like, I think it was Lokanath Swami asked, what does peet mean? Because Lord Chaitanya's birthplace is called Yoga Peet. And he says, well, it's like dham. It's another way to say dham. And yoga, of course, yoga means connection. So the idea of Yoga Peet means it's a place where the spiritual world is connected in this world. It's a portal, you might say. In science fiction, you step into a portal and you end up on another planet somewhere or something. Get teleported. So at a tirtha, it's where you get transported into the spiritual world. But you don't need anything mechanical. You don't need some kind of technology from the far future. But the technology already exists. And that technology is the chanting of Krishna's holy names, or the chanting of Krishna's glories. Those glories themselves, of course, chanting Krishna's glories, or Krishna's glories themselves, name, form, qualities, pastimes, and so on, characteristics, all of these things that are in relationship to Krishna are Krishna himself. So they possess all the same potency as Krishna. So we, of course, as we advance in Krishna consciousness, or one of the principles of our advancement in Krishna consciousness, the foundations of our advancement in Krishna consciousness, is increasing faith in this idea, this concept, or this principle of Krishna consciousness, of our philosophy, that these things, we begin with Krishna's name, Nam Rupa Guna Lila. So Nama, first of all, we chant, and our understanding, our conviction should be that this is actually Krishna. The sound of Krishna's name is Krishna himself. So the glorification of Krishna's name is also Krishna himself. When we glorify Krishna, we're in Krishna's presence. Krishna says, I'm not in the hearts of the yogis, I'm not in Vaikuntha, I'm wherever my devotees are chanting my glories. That's where I am. So that place, wherever the sound of Krishna's name is vibrated, that's a portal to the spiritual world, just like this temple, of course. Prabhupada would often, of course, he would glorify the actual Vrindavan in India as a place where devotees go. There's one interesting purport where Prabhupada talks about how, who was it? Oh, I forget what the devotee it was. Was it Gadadhar who wanted to leave he had taken Chaitra Sannyas, right? So he was living in Puri, and he had taken Chaitra Sannyas, which means taken a vow that he would never leave Puri. The Lord Chaitanya was going to Vrindavan, and he wanted to go along with him. So there was a whole scene. Lord Chaitanya said, no, you stay here. But he snuck away and met up with him later. And still Lord Chaitanya said, no, you can't come. You took Chaitra. I don't want to be the person who has caused you to break your vow. So there was one of these transcendental quarrels between Lord Chaitanya and his intimate devotees, where Gadadhar says, oh, forget it then, I'll just go on my own. So he took off on his own and went to, first Lord Chaitanya was going to Navadvipa, and from there he was going to Vrindavan. This is one of the times when Lord Chaitanya was unsuccessful. He went to Vrindavan, but everywhere he went, before he even got to, he was on his way to Vrindavan, before he even got to Bengal, there were thousands and thousands of people. He wanted to go like a saint, like a mendicant, but there were so huge crowds. It was at that time that he met Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan Goswami told him, this isn't the way to go on pilgrimage. Which is always quite interesting that Sanatan Goswami is instructing Lord Chaitanya. But Lord Chaitanya took it. Yes, you're right. This is not the way. Like a king going with his army on pilgrimage to Vrindavan. So Lord Chaitanya didn't go. He went back to Vrindavan. Of course, his devotees were always trying to stop him from going. They didn't want him to leave Puri because they wanted his association. So in the context of this whole pastime, Prabhupada talks about the benefits of going to Vrindavan. But he also says that there are some devotees who never went to Vrindavan. There are some who spent many, many years in Vrindavan, and there are some intimate devotees of Lord Chaitanya who never went to Vrindavan. And that's because of the principle that wherever the chanting of Krishna's holy names is going on, that place is Vrindavan. Or I think it was Gadadhar who said to Lord Chaitanya, you don't have to go to Vrindavan, you're Vrindavan. Why are you going to Vrindavan? You're already Vrindavan yourself. So Vrindavan is where Krishna is, Krishna in Vrindavan. Araja Bhagavan Vrajeshatanayas Tadhama Vrindavanam. Just as Araja Bhagavan, just as Bhagavan, Vrajeshatanaya, the son of the king of Braja, is Araja, worshipable, Tadhama Vrindavanam, his dham is also a worshipable holy place. And he even hearing about that place, in some other place, makes it Vrindavan. It's described by Prabodhananda Saraswati. Prabodhananda Saraswati in his book, what's the name of his book? Vrindavan Mahimamrita, is that it? He glorifies Vrindavan like anything. It's like if you don't live in Vrindavan, you might as well not exist. That's kind of the purport of his whole book. But then he also makes a concession, at least in one verse, where if you can't be there, at least have it in your mind. At least always be wanting to be there. You want to be in Vrindavan. In your heart, be in Vrindavan. Then you'll be there. There's one pastime of Prabhupada. He was traveling somewhere and he was in an airport somewhere. And some devotee said, Prabhupada, don't you dislike being in this horrible place? He said, no. Wherever we're chanting Krishna's name, that's Vrindavan. Even this is Vrindavan. We can always be in Vrindavan by glorifying Krishna. We can be in the Tirtha, in the holy place. So that's the power of chanting Krishna's glories. as the glory. This is compared to the singing of the bees here is going on. So we like to hear about Krishna. It's always nectar to hear more things about Krishna. For example, some of you may know this book. It's called Radha Krishna Ganodesh Deepika. A very nice book because it describes all of Krishna, not all of them, of course, but the major associates of Radha and Krishna. It says what color they are and what kind of clothes they wear. Amazing kinds of things. Like some of the cowherd boys are like Krishna's color. Some of them, like Subal, he's golden. I mentioned this before. Like he looks like Srimati Radharani. Another cowherd boy has a greenish color, like Lord Ram. And they wear different color outfits. And Mother Yashoda is described as Shyamala, which means darkish color. So there's all kinds of information there. It's quite interesting to read. And I know myself, when I learn something new, of course, this may be the part of the mode of passion. I always want to be. I remember when I first joined the movement, after about 2 weeks, I thought, well, somebody please tell me something new. I keep hearing the same thing. You're not this body. This material world is a horrible place. And you have to follow the regular principles. And, all right. I heard that last week. Now tell me something new. Of course, there weren't too many books out at that time, so the devotees didn't know very much. Now we hear there's so many books out there that talk about, the intimate pastimes, and we have devotees who have lived in Vrindavan for a long time, and they pick up all kinds of nectar about Krishna. Recently, I was listening to a class by Mahanidhi Swami, who's of course a Dham Vasi. He's been living in Vrindavan for a very long time. He has his own ashram there at Radhakund. So he comes up with these little pieces of nectar. He said that in the Sanat Kumar Samhita, I think is what it's called, Krishna's age is given. Of course, Krishna is Navayovana. In a recent class I was talking about Krishna's different ages. It was in the purport. So Krishna is called Navayovana, so eternally youthful. So that, in other words, he gets to a certain age and then he never ages beyond that point. So what is that age? Does anybody know? Well, it's actually given in the Sanat Kumar Samhita. He's 15 years, 9 months, and 7.5 days old. That's how old Krishna is eternally. Probably would say sometimes like a 15, 16-year-old boy. So there it is. 15 years, 9 months, 7.5 days. If you want to remember it. 15, 9, 7.5. And Srimati Radharani, you got that one too. Radharani is 14 years, 2 months, and 15 days. So she's a little younger than Krishna. So this information is there. Somehow the great devotees, they know these things. In fact, when I was in my recent class, I was talking about these different ages and how Krishna is very precocious and he matures quicker than an ordinary person. So when he leaves, he's supposed to be, I think, like 15 when he leaves his Vrindavan Leela, but it's actually just 11 months and some days, I think, something like that. And the great acharyas say that a person, there are great persons, of course, like Krishna, who mature at a rate of 1.5 times. So Krishna's aging when he's a little boy is 1.5 times sped up from ordinary persons. So we get all this kind of nectar about Krishna. And it's very nice for devotees to hear. And of course, why is it purifying to hear about these? I know we like it. It's nice to hear it, but it's nectar. It's amrita. This word amrita is very nice because amrita means very tasty. Just like the bees, they're always trying to taste the nectar of Krishna's flower garlands or the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet. Sometimes it's described that they're buzzing around Krishna's feet. Because Krishna's feet, of course, they don't smell like locker room feet. They smell like nectar. They smell like lotuses. Krishna has lotus feet. So they have the beautiful fragrance of lotuses. So the bees are sometimes buzzing around there. They want to taste that nectar. They want to get that nectar. Devotees are described as bees because they want to always get the nectar of Krishna's association or anything connected with Krishna. So amrita, that's nectar, means amrita. Bhakti rasa amrita sindhu. The science of devotion Science is usually something dry and dull, and maybe if you took it in school, you didn't like it very much. But the science of bhakti is amrita sindhu, bhakti rasa. The bhakti rasa, devotional service, is amrita sindhu. It's a whole ocean of nectar. It's so nice the way Rupa Goswami has divided up his book, Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. He's divided it into waves. You can swim in this wave of nectar, or you can swim in that wave of nectar, and it's all nectar. This is a material world, is all poison. It's often described like that by the devotees. Or it's a place where one is drowning. Miche mayar vashe yacha beshe kacha habu dubu bai. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings that song. What is that? What's that song? Radha Krishna bole, bole, bole. Yeah. So in that song, Miche mayar vashe yacha beshe kacha habu dubu bai. As we're in the ocean and we're bouncing up and down. Sometimes we're drowning. Sometimes we get a little relief from that. You know this example that's given in Chaitanya Charitamrita of the dunking stool. That sometimes, for punishment, they would put someone's head underwater, almost drown them. And then when they come up, they get a little bit of air. And that air is like heaven. Ah. Oh, it's so great to get a little bit of air. So that verse is actually kabe swarage utai, kabe narake dubai. It's described there, the first part of the verse. The dunking stool, the idea is that kabe swarage utai, swarage, sometimes you go up to swarga, so that's when you get a breath, you go to heavenly planets. Kabe narake dubai, and sometimes you go down to narak, to the hellish planets. That's the dunking stool analogy. It's not just in and out of water. It means up. Sometimes you go all the way up to heaven. Sometimes you go all the way down to hell. So that's the extremes that we face in this material existence. So even if it's not that extreme, over lifetimes, even in every lifetime, we get moments of elation and then moments of despair. It's a kind of drowning where you're... Sometimes maybe you feel alive, and sometimes you feel like you're dying. I think I explained one time, some years ago, I broke my wrist, and I had to have surgery where they had to put me to sleep. And when I was coming out of the anesthesia, I couldn't wake up. It was such a horrible experience. I kept trying to come to consciousness, but I couldn't. And I kept, going away. It was almost like I was dying over and over again. I was panicking, really. And I started chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And the nurses there, they were trying to revive me. And they turned to my wife and they said, does he speak English? So at least I remembered Krishna. So anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that we're always drowning, so we should be chanting also. We're always drowning, we're always going under. So what does he say? What is the solution with deliberate Jeev Krishna Das Avishvas Torle Korle Toar Dukkanai? He says, this misery will go away when you have the Vishvas, the conviction that I'm a Jiva soul, Jeev Krishna Das. I'm a Jiva, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. Avishvas. If I have this faith, Korle Toar Dukkanai, all the dukkha will go away. So this is how we, when we hear about Krishna, of course, especially as we're hearing about Krishna through the parampara, as Srila Prabhupada has presented Krishna to us, we're always reminded we're the servant of Krishna. We're the servant of Krishna. We're even the cowherd boys and everyone, all the associates of Krishna, they're serving Krishna. What better service can you be to someone than to be their friend or their parents or whatever, their relatives, that service. So everyone is serving Krishna. And of course they serve Krishna directly in other ways. So we're always reminded of this. We're the eternal servants of Krishna. Even we think ourselves not just the servants of Krishna, but dasa, das, anudas, the servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna. We're servants of the Mother Yashoda and Gopal and Sri Sudam and Sridam and so on, or the gopis and manjaris, or their servants. We're servants of their servants. We're hoping for someday, we're hoping that someday we'll become purified by serving their servants so that we maybe be able to get close to Vrindavan. As at Uddhava prayed, even just maybe a blade of grass outside Vrindavan. Just when the Brajbrasis come and go from Vrindavan, they'll step on me. I'll get some dust of their lotus feet. That will be my perfection. So this, we understand the sages when they're glorifying the Lord and glorifying the Lord's Dham and the Lord's associates, they're feeling transcendental happiness and they're feeling themselves in that tirtha, in that holy place. They're feeling themselves connected to the spiritual world through the medium of transcendental sound. So I'll stop here, the verse again. Ete linastava yashokila loka tirtham gayanta ari purushanupatam bhajante prayo ami munigana bhavadiya mukya gudam vane pina jahatyanu anaghatma daivam. O original personality, these bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. Though you have disguised yourself within this forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. Any questions or comments? Well, there is the sage. There are sages, the muni. There are different kinds of. Actually, I think it's described about the rasa dance, how there are sage. There were those who were coming from different places to be gopis in Krishna's rasa dance, and one of them is the munigana or sages. They were sages in their previous life, so that is an explanation of it. That the sages. Of course, sages doesn't just mean ordinary sages, it means devotees. Real sages are devotees of the Lord. Yes, they may have been sages in their previous life. These bees, this is what Krishna says here. Now, we can also understand that sometimes Krishna just makes a philosophical point that elevated sages who worship you, this will be their destination. They'll get your association ultimately.
Reminded me of in the Anjalila, there's a quote from Swami from Dr. Madhava. Vrindavanam divilata paritam latascha pushpas puritagrabaja pushpani chasmita madhuvatani madhuvatascha shuti harigita. That verse is notable because the.
Where's that from?
Vidagdha Madhava.
Vidagdha Madhava. Anjavan,
it's quoted in Anjavan, Rupa Goswami, where it says that the there's so many wonderful things growing in Vrindavan, and Vrindavanam Divya Lata Lata means the
creepers.
Just and Pushpa Spita, this flowers are on the creepers. And Vrindavanam Divilata, and Pushpani Chasmita Madhuvatani Madhuvata. It refers to the bees, that the bees are hovering and buzzing around and making these sounds and enjoying the Vrindavan atmosphere. And Shruti Hari Gita, then he says finally that the sound of the bees is far more satisfying to Krishna than the sound of chanting the Vedas. Very sweet sound of the bees in Goloka. It makes the chanting of the Vedas become very minimal. But next to the last word in every line is the first, the syllable at least, is the first word in the next line. So it's completely poetic. I mean,
yeah. I think the gopis are sometimes, they're in the Gurvashtakam. Nikunjayuno Ratikedi Siddhai Yayali Bir. Yayali Bir. Ali Bir. So that has something to do with like the bees, lined up like the bees or something like that, serving the gopis. I mean, the gopis serving Krishna, or the spiritual master in the mood of the gopis serving Radha and Krishna.
Krishna's Kaviraj has that verse in the second chapter of CC, the second verse, I think, where he says, Karnanandi Kaladvinir Vahatu Mejiwa Maru Prangane Krishna Kirtana Gana Nartana. And he describes that he's praying that the Ganges water, the Ganga water, will flow on his, over his dry, parched, desert-like tongue. You know, this is just like nectar of the, and then comparing the devotees to swarms of bees and hunksa chakra marupa shreni viharas, swarms of bees and otherwise, and Prabhupada mentions in the purport how the karmis are simply crying and uselessly in their assemblies. You know, just like crows, making worthless noises. Whereas if we listen to the shastra, listen to these wonderful verses, it's just like nectar flowing, I mean, over into the ear.
Also, the gopis would train parrots. I think the male is called Sukha, and the female Sarika, or something like that. Yeah, and there's one called Manjuvak. So he would glorify Krishna. And when you hear that glorification, it's so amazing that it makes the human beings look like parrots. You know, because so poetic and, you know, glorious. Yeah.
When you're giving it the definition of Amrita, isn't it also Mrita with the A in front of it?
Yeah, Mrita means Mrityu, means death. Amrita means deathless.
So anything that's, it's just an interesting simile, I guess, death and no death by hearing. So it's the nectar that sustains the life is this Amrita.
Yeah, I think I was going to mention two things. I only mentioned one. I get stuck with the nectar and I forget about the deathlessness part. So it's nectar, it tastes like nectar, but it also makes you deathless. Amrita, no more death. That's why it says, by rising and setting, the sun takes away everyone's life, except for those who are hearing the immortal nectar of Krishna's pastimes. When you hear that, you drink it in your ear. Pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam mahura hura sika bhuvi bhavukaha. It goes into the ear and makes us immortal. That's how we drink the nectar. Oral reception. There are two kinds of oral, you know, A-U-R-A-L and O-R-A-L. So we like the O-R-A-L, prasadam. That's oral reception too. But so they both purify, both kinds of oral reception. Pushkar.
Of that verse, when Yamaraj had been invited to the whole setting of speaking the Bhagavatam in the first place, aho naloke pieta harilila mita vachaha. So, because these speeches were to be in harilila mita vachaha, so that gives us an idea of harilila amrita.
Harilila amrita.
As long as anyone was staying there, they wouldn't be subject to death. At least, even in the, you know, with Sutta Goswami.
Yeah, we have lots of words with Amrita in it. Karnamrita. Krishna's glories are nectar for the ears. Karnamrita.
Harilila Amrita.
Harilila Amrita. Harilila is Amrita. Mahamrita. Great nectar. So much nectar we have.
Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yes. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.